Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go, darling, have no place to go. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going.
6:11. It's a little after 1 p.m. in Warsaw, Poland, where the president is about to speak in his first speech of this trip, which will lead to the G20. He'll be in Germany later today, and then spend a couple of days in Germany, and tomorrow we'll meet Vladimir Putin face-to-face. Lots to talk about today. Chuck Todd will be on in the 7 o'clock hour. The former ethics counsel to George W. Bush, Richard Painter. I love this guy. Richard Painter is the real deal. You know what Richard Painter does? You ask Richard Painter a question, he sighs, and then he goes, ugh. Let me tell you what's really going on.
Yeah.
He's great. Pat Brady, of course, is here. We always appreciate Pat's time. And Eric Edelstein will join us on the phone from the road later on. Dean on Showbiz. Patrick Sharp will probably talk a little hockey.
In studio, huh?
On the phone.
That'll be great, though, because we just want his words of wisdom, and we're so happy he's back.
You could FaceTime him.
Maybe
video phone.
Yeah, Skype him.
Yeah, video phone. Sharpie will be on with us after 8 o'clock. And then after 9, John Williams will be live in studio. John's got an event coming up with a dead president.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the band. So that's coming up later. How are you guys doing?
I think we're doing pretty good.
Doing great.
Yeah, it's going to be hot and sticky today. How are you doing, Steve?
Fine,
is the question.
More on this later with Pat Brady, but yesterday Pat Brady and I played golf with the great Emil Esposito at the lovely Glen Club.
And I heard, not that you needed fixing, but I heard he fixed you guys.
He may have saved the golf summer.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. The golf summer was hanging in the balance, and he may have saved it.
Emil's the golf king.
Yes, and because we've been friends for, I don't know, 20 years or longer, he subtly looked at me and went, what the hell are you doing? And then came over and fixed my grip in like 30 seconds.
And you were hitting it well?
I hit it well, yeah.
Excellent.
First time all season. I was on golf life support. I was going to go, you know what? It's not fun. I'm not going to play.
Okay, but see, golf life support for you is like a great day for the rest of us. It's all
well, that's
perspective.
That's true. Say, but that's not really.
That's not the point. I know as far as you're concerned.
Yeah. I'll be dead soon. I'd like to hit it well again a few times before I'm gone.
But Dave's right, though. When you have,
day is like we dream about your bad.
Right. Like Dave wants to hit it as far as you do on a bad day.
Yeah. True.
Okay. All right. We'll get there. But you guys should go see Emil, too, because he'll look at you and say the same thing. What the hell are you doing?
Although he'll call me sweetheart.
Yes, he will. No, he's a great teacher.
Yeah.
And he's very nice to people like Andrea. But Dave, you know, he'll give it to you straight. Yeah.
But you know what he does? You know, because he's so great, he'll say, Dal.
Exactly.
Listen.
Exactly.
He's great.
That's exactly. Time now for the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers, the 60 Minute Men. They're people for heating and cooling and all sorts of stuff.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Men.
Top six at six. Of course, there is a very important speeches going on today, tomorrow, and through the weekend. Very important meetings as well going on today, tomorrow, and through the weekend. And much of it relates to North Korea after Pyongyang tested an ICBM and is proposing that wider U.S. sanctions against any country that does business with the outlaw regime be dropped on their behalf while we insist that they continue and be ramped up. Unfortunately, none of that was addressed when President Trump met with the media in a press conference with a BS first question set up by a friendly reporter and then jumping all over. I think it was Hallie Jackson from NBC. We can take this up with Chuck Todd when she brought up whether Russia was the main culprit in hacking the election. Not a good start. Comparing the state income tax he'd vetoed a day earlier to, this is a quote from Governor Rauner.
Mm-hmm.
a 2x4 smacked across the forehead.
Yeah, he was in Hegwisch yesterday talking to people and business owners, just saying that this is going to be explosive.
Yeah, Governor Rauner warned lawmakers not to override him and said he would do everything possible to try to make sure they don't. I think that ship has sailed.
And I think you called yesterday when we said, oh, they're going to vote on it. And you said, I wouldn't say that so soon. Sure enough, yesterday, Mike Madigan says, well, we'll vote tomorrow, which would be today at 1.
Yeah, why hurry? Yeah, because, you know, Mike's got a lot of things going on.
They didn't have enough lawmakers to not only vote, but to override the vote. They need 71 to override. They only have 50.
I got to ask Pat Brady about this, because Pat's in and out of Springfield all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you have enough votes for an override, I would think the last thing you'd want to do is have people have time to think about whether or not they're going to vote with you.
Completely agree.
So get it over with.
I know.
And that's Madigan's fault. I mean, Madigan tells him to be there or not.
So I'll ask Pat about it and why, you know, did they move the Capitol? It's still in Springfield,
it's
right?
It's still in the same spot where it has been for the past 2.5 years.
But the dome, right? It's the big dome thing?
Yeah, gold.
Yeah. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle's administration is warning of as much as a 10% budget reduction, cutting spending on important things that you care about in Cook County, if a judge doesn't allow a countywide sweetened beverage tax to take effect by August. The Cook County sweetened beverage tax is on hold. Why? The court challenge?
The court upheld it. It's on hold until July 12th. And at that point, it will likely be instituted unless there's another stay. The problem with this, as we talked about, it's completely inconsistent. There's drinks that are being taxed that don't have sugar or sweetener or anything of that sort. And then now they're talking no free refills at restaurants. And if you go get a fountain drink, say at a 7-Eleven or a Quick Mart, that you might be taxed on that double, even if you just get the small size drink, because they anticipate it's just too inconsistent. You can't pin down exactly how much you're going to spend per drink and at which establishment.
Yeah, and the rollout too was all messed up too. Some McDonald's stores actually were charging the tax. That's how they didn't get information that it was blocked by the court.
Yeah, early on. Yeah. And then there's this. I didn't see this, and I dropped my landline as recently as a month ago. AT&T is pulling the plug on all Illinois landlines.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I don't have a landline, but...
I do.
I don't anymore. Steve,
I do, and I keep it because...
Do you, Dave?
I do.
Yeah. If there's a disaster or something, it'll still work, because it doesn't have a tower, and it still has a power source, and I'm a little disappointed by this, but you know what? I won't pay AT&T more money.
Do you guys use your landline?
I hadn't used mine in forever. In fact, what would happen is... the voicemail would fill up with robocalls and spam calls.
Right.
I almost never answer it. Mm-hmm. But the caller ID will pop up on the television.
On TV, right.
And unless I know the number, unless it's a relative, we don't pick it up.
And that's why we pulled the plug.
And you know, there's the big part of this is there are a lot of senior citizens, especially down south.
That's
my
good point.
Mom, for instance, that's all they have. They don't have the mobile phones and cell phones.
How did this get passed?
I don't know.
Lots of money from a lobbyist. That's my bet. Follow the money.
Illinois, okay, the end of the landline's effective any day now, but I think there's still court challenges to this as well, right? This is an AT&T thing.
But it's only AT&T, right? Because mine's Xfinity.
Yeah, it is AT&T this point. But the others will follow along if this clears, you know, hurdles, because they want to move on to stuff that's making money, and landlines are no longer a profit center. Right. But, Steve, you bring up a good point. For the older folks?
Yeah.
And who are not cell phone friendly, what are you doing for them?
Exactly. And not only that, what about 911? Because you haven't yet perfected the technology to find your mobile phone. If you dial 911, it's not a sure thing that they're going to find where you're at. With a landline, they know your house is tied to that.
I don't know about the 911 problem. I thought they had fixed it, because 911, is you could have a phone with no battery that's not... you can have a phone that is not part of a service anymore that you can take out of a cupboard that you can call 911.
And even if your phone gets locked, there's a little button, emergency call. Boom, you call it, 911.
But you're saying, Steve, it's spotty?
It's the location part of it, yeah.
Oh, especially in northern Wisconsin, it's so spotty for us. We have to have Verizon.
But here's the problem. You're in northern Wisconsin. former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy is mulling over making his first run for political office. Ready? For mayor. McCarthy for mayor. I'd advise him not to do that. I would not think that's a good call.
I would agree, especially since you need the union support and the police support.
And
I don't know if he has that right now.
And, you know, that's everything that can dredge up a lot of things that maybe you don't want to have discussed at this point.
Right.
And then The United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, tried to be tougher yesterday as opposed to the day before. On the 4th of July, late in the afternoon. This goes back to Dave's original coined phrase, and Dave should be trademarked and paid for this. When Dave said, well, what did you say in regards to tweeting?
Don't hit send.
Yeah. Don't hit send. There should be T-shirts. There should be hats. There should be buttons.
Right.
Don't hit send. Nikki Haley on July 4th in the afternoon tweeted, in meetings all day, and then it was hashtag thanks North Korea, and got blasted by everybody going, who forced you to take the government job?
Right.
You know, sorry if you don't think the threat from this guy's, but you know, worthy of you being in the meeting. It just is much worse than that.
No, you know what? And I think people, especially lawmakers lately, I know we haven't seen much of this, hit send without thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one she'd like to have back, because I think generally she's done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. It's the Steve Cochran Show. We'll come back, check in with Nick in a moment. And the president has just begun his speech in Poland. Andrea is monitoring it. We'll have more on the big story in 10 minutes.
What to see, what's out at the show. Oh, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochran Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
We're going to wrap this song to say the following. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
All right, that's enough. Happy birthday, Nick.
Good. Dear Nick.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
For which part? That. For stopping the song or for actually remembering it was your birthday?
No, for remembering it was my birthday. It means a lot. Thank you very much.
On your recommendation, I went to see Baby Driver and loved it.
Yeah.
Everyone on this show, you are assigned homework. You need to go see Baby Driver.
Okay, let's read this. Okay,
Baby Driver.
I do want to see it because John Hamm's in it.
No, I'm telling you, you should take care of this.
I want to see it.
No, I mean now. Find a theater that's showing.
Can I wait till
the 7 a.m. show?
But it is exactly what Nick said last week. It is not like anything you've ever seen. It is a musical only in the terms of the fact there's no other way to describe it. But nobody, it's not cop rock. nobody stops in the middle of a gun battle and goes, we're having a gun battle, and then it breaks into a dancing situation. But it's very entertaining with a very entertaining cast and tons of action. Well done by you.
Well done by Edgar Wright. And how about that sequence done to Hocus Pocus by
Crazy.
Focus? Is that not
crazy?
Absolutely insane. One of the best, my favorite sequence in the movies this year so far.
Yeah, so very entertaining with a goofy name. You know, you hear Baby Driver and you think, well, it's an animated movie. It's a kid thing.
Yeah, but in a very slick way, that's also a Simon and Garfunkel song. And it's used at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Well, and it turns out to be the perfect title for the movie. And the lead, where did the kid that plays the lead, where did he come from?
He's in those, I was going to say detergent, Divergent movies. He's in the movies about, you know, about the
Divergent.
Tide. Yeah. I said detergent. Yeah. It's about Tide. And,
the Divergent series. Okay.
Right.
Well, he's a star.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is like his first major breakout role. And he's better in this than he's been in anything that I've ever seen him in. He's terrific.
And the woman that plays his girlfriend,
Lily James.
Where'd she come from?
She's also been in a couple of movies that are, you know, that she's British, and she's also been in a couple of movies that not a lot of people have seen. Edgar Wright went out of his way. He wanted to cast two people that not a lot of people knew. He wanted them to embody the characters as opposed to, you know, hiring like a star to play
the
lead.
Smart. And then really smart.
Yeah, and then he peppered the supporting roles with people that everybody knows.
Yeah.
You know, from Kevin Spacey to John Hamm to Jamie Foxx, who I don't like at all, and I loved him. In Baby Driver.
I like it more than you do. He is, for the most part, a terrific actor. He picks some goofy things to do, and he's had a sketchy off-camera life. But I think he's terrific. And John Hamm is great. And the woman that played John Hamm's ex-wife, wife, whatever she turns out to be. It's not a weak spot in the cast.
No, there's not. Iyaza Gonzalez is her name. This is one of her first English language movies. She's a sensation in the Latino films and on television. And she was in the TV version of From Dusk Till Dawn on the El Rey Network.
So, well, listen, highly recommended, as you can tell. And I forgot to mention this. Let me do this now. American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. They sponsor pretty much this entire 6 o'clock hour. We appreciate it. New movie of the week is probably Spider-Man, right?
That's the only one. There's one smaller film that's being released, but the big one is Spider-Man Homecoming. And this is taken from the Spider-Man that was in the Avengers and Civil War movies, not Andrew Garfield, not the terrible reboot that oddly featured Jamie Foxx in the last one as the villain. This is in the universe that the Avengers are in it. And Tom Holland plays him. And according to Spider-Man aficionados and people who actually read the comics and stuff, the way they're handling this character is the way that they should have handled him all the way back from the Sam Raimi movies. Like, he's a kid. He's a high school kid. And Michael Keaton is the villain in it. Robert Downey Jr. is in it as Tony Stark, Iron Man. And
what do you think of his quote this week? I thought it was great, where he said, "I'm going to quit doing Iron Man movies before it's embarrassing."
Yeah, I totally understand what he's saying, where he's going with it. He's, you know, I mean, obviously he has a lot of, you know, he's committed to the role because it was the role that brought him back from the brink. I mean, he had that movie and Tropic Thunder the same year.
Yeah.
And that was like the big return for
That got him over the top. But I'd make the argument, too, that Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal was big. He had a fall after Ally McBeal.
Was it after he stumbled again? Okay.
Yeah, he stumbled again. But, I mean, Ally McBeal was after that. Ally McBeal was after he slept in that kid's bed. Remember that when he was so.
Yeah, but that was the comeback after he was sleeping at the neighbor's house, right? Where he's just wandering into people's houses.
Ally McBeal was right when he was when he fell asleep in that.
Listen, he's a great actor, and he's a complete chop salad between the ears, like most great actors are. But he seems to have gotten his life together in no small part, and he gives full credit to his wife, who has straightened him out.
Yeah, he's a very. I find him to be a very inspirational guy.
Yeah,
he can get his life together.
You know. All right. So you've got a list of your 10 best for the first 6 months of 2017. I don't want to give up the list because we're too short on time to do it justice. But where can people pick it up?
It's online on WGNRadio.com, and also. The podcast, I had Colin and Eric on, and we did full lists, and the podcast will be posted within, I believe, a half an hour or 45 minutes, so people can hear the whole list. But Baby Driver's on top.
Cracking the whip, man. Producer's got a little infant. He's making him do podcasts. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Is Wonder Woman on there? Can you just say?
Woman is not. It's not on there.
Well, listen, you and Nick can take this up in a private fight. Oh, National Lampoon's Vacation, Tuesday, 8 o'clock, Movie Club Theater in Rosemont. Tickets at Fandango.com. What time are you starting?
I will be there at 7. I'll introduce the movie at 8, and we'll talk about it afterwards. And it's Fandango.com. Reserve your seats now. A very, very funny movie that I'm really excited to see back on the big screen.
What are you doing for your birthday?
I'm not really doing anything. But for the weekend, I'm going to hang out with my folks. I'm taking them to see Baby Driver because they haven't seen it yet.
Good.
And then we're gonna go to Gale Street Inn for dinner.
Well, say hi to George. And what did you ask your parents for your birthday? I mean, they must buy you something.
Well, I didn't ask them for anything. I don't know. You know what they're gonna get me. But it's a safe bet that they'll get me something Hawks related. Oh, by the way, give my love to Sharpie, please. I love him.
Me too.
Listen, you and I both are off the hook for a while because the ladies can focus on somebody other than you and I. That's all I'm saying. I'm glad he's back. We'll see. All right, buddy. See ya.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I have to ask about this. Since you started the whole wrestling video thing, what are your thoughts about what has happened since then? I mean, CNN went after you and has threatened to expose the identity of a person they said was responsible for it. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think what CNN did was unfortunate for them. As you know, now they have some pretty serious problems. They have been fake news for a long time. They've been covering me in a very, very dishonest way. Do you have that also, by the way, Mr. President? What CNN and others, I mean, not others, NBC is equally as bad, despite the fact that I made them a fortune with The Apprentice, but they forgot that.
I'm going to go way out on a limb here and say that's not exactly using your presidential time to the best of your ability on this trip. Good God. Chuck Todd joins us now. I'm Tippy Daly. And, of course, the host of Meet the Press, the longest-running television show in history. And that Fancy Pants podcast of yours is doing well, too. What's that called?
It's called 1947, year we were born. So, you know, retro, we started as a radio show. So, you know, we're at home in podcast land.
Yeah, so give it a listen because there's some good longer-form stuff there.
Thank you.
All right, so Chuck, here's the thing that concerns me at times, and it's journalistic fatigue with continuing to fight the fight. And I know it's not going to end, but because you swim in this pool every day, and we do, and people who are closely associated with this do, the rest of the public, rightfully, because they're living their lives, catches up a little slower. So how do you keep it fresh when all you want to do is scream at this continuing just outrage of this fake news BS and the damage that it's causing?
No, I think this is the great challenge for us as a society. Forget us in the press. This is for us as a society. I mean, we have this is a blatant disregard for freedom of the press. I don't know what else to call it. It's in doing what he did today on an international stage. Oh, by the way, the Polish government has been trying to crack down on how the press covers parliament. To sit next to another world leader, the president of the United States, representing a country that is the beacon of freedom around the world, to then denounce the most basic freedom in our Constitution, the First Amendment, standing there doing what he did today. You're right. And I'm sorry that the rest of the public isn't as outraged about this. Because this is not about liberal or conservative. This is about shuttering free speech. And you're right. I'm worried about us getting numb to it. I'm worried about the public getting numb to it because they just think, oh, geez, you know, another journalist says the sky is falling. Trump's sort of, you know, don't you know, he's just being a fool. He's just he doesn't mean half of what he says. That's all true. But the problem is there's people that do listen to him and think what he's saying is 100% accurate.
I played golf with somebody last weekend and then bumped into some other friends afterwards. These are people I know, people who I respect. They're successful in their lives. They've got good families. And one of them said to me, he goes, hey, no offense, but I don't know how any of us are supposed to believe anything in the media anymore. It's just direct.
Right. No, this is the success of what Trump has done. We haven't changed anything. But there's this perception, oh, you know, he says, you don't know what to believe and all this stuff. Look what he did on Russia today. This is today. Today he's asked about Russia's culpability in the 2016 election. That could be Russia, could have been somebody else, he said. You know, and he equated it to weapons of mass destruction with Iraq and the intel on that. And, you know, this is the president of the United States that is sowing these seeds. I don't blame that your friend says,
yeah, I don't either.
To believe.
No,
the
I don't.
The problem is when you have the president of the United States saying it, this isn't on us. This is on him.
Yeah, exactly right. And then you have to stop. You have to stop and you have to say what we all know to be true. You wouldn't know about the Hillary Clinton email server problem if it wasn't for the media in this country. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the New York Times, the Washington Post, NBC, the Chicago Tribune. You know, this show, others. You wouldn't know about anything on the other side of what you believe if not for the work that the media does every day. So take a moment to take that extra step and understand that.
And I think when people do, they get it. But I think you're right. I think there is this fatigue about this. Look, I do think that there are too many of my colleagues get caught up in their own personal brand when they have these disputes with the president, whether it's CNN or others. I do think that they make it too much about themselves. And the more you make it about yourself and not about the president, about what's going on, I think the better. You know, you can't make this about yourself. I think it does turn people off and it makes it sort of I think when you do this, there's the old saying, you know, you get into a wrestling match with a pig, you're going to get dirty. And you know, you're never going to be able to. I mean, Trump's the king of this stuff, man. Trump is so good at this stuff when it comes to sort of the WWE style of dealing with the press. And those that try to do it with him only demean our entire industry when they do it.
Completely agree. I think the misperception is maddening, that people actually think, you know, we are fed what to say or what to cover.
Or we make it up.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Chuck, I just was listening to...
No, and you want to scream, you're right, you want to scream at the top of your lungs.
Right.
But again, I go back to, you cannot let this be about, like, you know, yourself personally. And again, I don't envy with my friends at CNN, and, you know, I've dealt with him taking shots. You cannot make this about yourself. When you do, you hurt us all.
Completely. And then I was watching, now here's the flip side of all of this. I was just watching the speech, most of it, President Trump speaking in Warsaw, talking again and again how we're a community of nations, how we have to join together to fight hostile regime. We have common enemies. I don't know whoever wrote that speech. It's a fantastic speech. So you hear something like this, and then on the flip side, then tomorrow there'll be something about fake news or taking a pot shot at a commentator or a reporter.
Well, I think you make a good point. I think it goes to the prepared statements that he reads and the stuff that he does, and does he absorb and understand any of it, or is he just reading a prompter, the thing he mostly accused Obama of?
Oh, well, on this, I mean, it's pretty obvious this was a written speech for him. And again, the words, he undermined the words themselves by saying what he said about the press and about the Russia allegations before he gave the speech. So it didn't, you know, to me, it sort of, look, the speech will, you know, maybe it'll play well with the Polish press, which in that sense is kind of necessary. But other than that, this is not a...
It's a rough start.
I don't think it helps. He just undermined it. Yeah, he undermined it.
Rough start.
We haven't even had the Putin meeting yet.
Speaking of which, Putin is a tough guy. Maybe not as tough as he thinks he is, but he certainly wants to put that image out there. I would think the last thing he would respect would be somebody that comes in. Putin knows what he did. Putin knows what his government did. He should expect to be challenged. And if he's not challenged, doesn't the United States in general and Trump specifically take another notch down in Putin's eyes?
I think so. I think he knows he's got – this doesn't help at all. And supposedly they're going to try to limit the amount of time the two of them are together. And I guess they think that that's, you know, going to limit the damage that could be done in what intelligence gets leaked or things like that. But I tell you, it just, yeah, I mean, because here's what Putin knows. President Trump won't bring it up at all, apparently. He isn't going to bring it up, or maybe he does bring it up, but on the side. And all the coverage will be about how he didn't, you know, he wasn't forceful with him. Who's going to love it? Who's going to love it? Because all it's doing what he wanted to do, which is so disorder.
Isn't that a sad statement, though? They're going to limit the time they have together, yeah. Not because of working together to stop a common enemy.
Well,
but you're right, though, Chuck. So intelligence doesn't get leaked.
Or any other potential damage that could be out there.
It's
yeah.
less about intelligence. They're more worried about, they don't know what he's going to say to him. They don't know what he's going to promise. And they want to just limit the amount of interaction. Yes, that does say a lot. But look, they already have an example. When he met with the Russian ambassador in the Oval Office, you know, that's when he popped off about Comey and called him, you know, called this whole thing, you know, said he was obsessed with Russia. It's just a bizarre thing to say for the president of the United States to say to one of our chief adversaries.
I'll let you go on this. Is there any update on the Mueller investigation that's public at this point?
Other than what we know is the type of lawyers he's hiring, which does give a hint at what he's up to. He's hiring a lot of people. A lot of lawyers with experience dealing with money laundering, hiding money, moving money around in the shadows, which is what a lot of these Russian oligarchs dine out on. So put it this way, you don't hire these lawyers because you think this is an investigation that's going to go quickly either.
Yeah, that makes sense. But again, I keep coming back to the same conclusion that I think most of us have felt forever, and that is he was broke in the 90s, he, Trump. And he got money from Russia. So whenever he comes out and says, I don't do any business with Russia, I don't get any money from Russia, he never addresses the fact that he owes Russia money. And that would be a problem if you owed Russia money.
Well, you don't have to have investments in Russia to have Russia have investments in you.
Right. Right, right. I look forward to meet the press.
Never answered.
Look forward to meet the press on Sunday. Thank you, sir.
You got it. Bye.
Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, and the podcast, obviously, in MTP Daily, which he will have a full breakdown on what happened in Poland. And what can, by the way, the president continuing to speak. This is a long one.
I know. He's still talking. He's really talking Poland up. And like you said earlier, too, he's got such a great audience.
Yeah.
I mean, they are loving him right
now.
Well,
it's great. It's great that they love him. But let's say something of substance and then back it up with action.
Right.
There is a fascinating documentary this weekend on Amelia Earhart. Amelia Earhart, long before any of our time, was going to be the first woman to fly around the world with her friend Fred. She disappeared, and it's been a mystery for 80 years. There is a photograph that's been uncovered in the National Archives, which seems to show two people, Americans, very distinctly dressed, with distinct looks about them, near a barge that appears to be carrying wreckage of an airplane. The wreckage on the barge is 37 or 38 feet long, which was the exact dimensions of Amelia Earhart's plane. The woman in the picture, and it's believed to be a woman because of the hair style, is wearing pants. It's an outfit that women didn't wear, especially in that part of the world, in that era, in the 30s? Yeah, late 30s.
Late 30s, yes. 1937.
37. And Fred.
How about that?
Face up on Fred, and his face looks
Fred
just
Newman.
Like Fred.
Fred yeah. Now, who took the picture? They say...
Spy journalist, right?
Yeah. Amanda was later executed as a U.S. spy.
And so, that's why it's in the archives then?
No. I mean, well, you think the archives would have been alerted by now. That's the other
that's
mystery,
what's
too.
So weird.
Well, it's all in this documentary, which is going to air. I don't have it in front of me. See if you can find out what it's going to air.
Well, they went big with their with the news
with
yesterday.
The leak, but the show
but
itself
it's
going to
air,
Sunday
I
night?
Think, Sunday, yeah.
See if you can find me details
okay.
on that. But at any rate, the notion would be that Amelia Earhart's plane crash-landed near Saipan in this chain of islands, and that Amelia Earhart and Fred died in Japanese prison camps prior to the war.
Because they were being held as spies. Isn't that a cool story?
She was abducted by extraterrestrials. Everybody knows.
Well, that's the other option. The other option is extraterrestrials.
Right. This story is just fascinating.
It really is.
I hope this is not a hoax, but it might be. Who knows?
It is Sunday night at 9 p.m.
What network?
Eastern time, 9 p.m. History Channel. History,
on the History Channel.
So 8 o'clock.
Oh, what is the History Channel about?
All right. This is so cool.
Back, it is so cool. I'm so fascinated.
Me too. Back with the news next on 720 WG.
The Steve Cochran Show.
When you see illegals, people that are not citizens, and they're on the registration rolls. Look, Bill, we can be babies, but you take a look at the registration. You have illegals, you have dead people, you have this. It's really a bad situation. It's really bad.
Prior to my head exploding, let me compliment the president on speaking in Poland today and saying Russia needs to stop their destabilizing activities. Well, it's a step. He needs to carry it forward into tomorrow. Richard Painter will join us in just a second. Pat Brady is here. Pat, how are you?
Morning. How you doing?
Doing fine. And you work where?
Next Generation Strategies.
By the way, how are you? I didn't ask you.
I'm great. Thanks.
Okay, good. Good. Don't appear to be
I'm
good.
Touched.
Yeah, I thought you might be. Richard Painter was the chief ethics lawyer for George W. Bush, law professor at the University of Minnesota, and one of my favorite guys to see on my TV screen on CNN or MSNBC or anybody else that asked him, because he's a no BS guy, and he joins us now. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you, and appreciate you taking the time. As a law professor at the University of Minnesota, What do the kids you're teaching say about all of this since January? Are they optimistic, pessimistic, somewhere in between?
Well, I think that a lot of people in the country are getting fed up with the grandstanding from both political parties, particularly what's going on in the White House, but some of what's going on in Capitol Hill as well. We want people to focus on the issues and addressing the serious problems that this country confronts at home and around the world, and instead we've got a lot of people accusing each other of all sorts of things, and serious problems with respect to the Trump administration not following the rules, the ethics rules that have been complied with by other previous administrations, including President Bush's White House that I worked for. And the people in Congress not really being willing to do anything about it, and everything is becoming very partisan. That's very unfortunate. And so I think my students and colleagues and my neighbors, many others in Minnesota, feel the same way a lot of other people do in the United States. We want Washington to get to work.
What I continue to see is a lot of people who have camera courage, including the president. If there's a camera in front of them, they're tough guys. But when it comes to actually doing the hard work, making the tough decisions, and having the decisions tagged to them in their record, they're gutless. And it doesn't bode well for our future.
Well, that's a big concern. And they're focusing on the wrong issues. And this whole voter fraud, we've had some instances of voter, more traditional voter fraud, people voting who shouldn't. But there's very little of that in the United States. The real problem is foreign infiltration of our political system, whether through campaign contributions or what the Russians said. And so if we really want to focus on election fraud, we ought to be investigating what's going on in Moscow, not harassing the 50 states and making them turn over a bunch of documents to the federal government. Looking for a needle in a haystack. So once again, we've got a lot of political grandstanding that may really be just focused on trying to intimidate the minority vote or something like that, but it's not focused on a real problem, and then the real problems go ignored.
Professor, you tweeted last night, wasting taxpayer money demanding documents from the states when they should be investigating Russian hacking. I think most will agree with that. My question to you, the voting documents that they are demanding from the states, aren't they arguably unconstitutional?
They may very well be. I leave that to the states to defend those types of claims by the federal government. The federal government should not be getting itself involved in the state electoral process unless there's very clear evidence of voter fraud or the type of discrimination and voter intimidation we've had of minority groups in the past. That's not the proper role of the federal government. And many of us who believe in states' rights, who supported the Republican Party in the past because of a strong stance on states' rights, find this really to be quite offensive. This is going to cost taxpayers money at the state level to comply with these types of requests. And once again, there's really no evidence of widespread voter fraud of the type that they're looking for. The real problem is what Russia was doing. And there's been no response from this administration to that. There's been no effective response from Congress. Talk about a sanctions bill, but no real response to make sure that that never happens again.
Hey, Professor, speaking of the Constitution, can you explain the prohibitions against the president and or members of Congress making money while in office? Or how's that work? I don't think a lot of people understand, including me.
Well, there's only one constitutional provision that would prohibit it, and that is the emolument clause. Emolument was sort of a word from the Latin root for benefit and profit. What you cannot do when you hold a position of trust in the United States government is earn profits, benefits from dealings with foreign governments and companies controlled by foreign governments. That is a constitutional prohibition that's been around ever since the founding, and that is the one that we are quite concerned about President Trump not complying with because the Trump organization is doing business with a lot of foreign governments around the world and foreign governmental banks and the rest of it. That's the main constitutional prohibition. We then have other statutory prohibitions on financial conflicts of interest. It's a criminal offense for anybody in the executive branch to participate in a government matter that has a direct predictable effect on their own financial position. So that statute, that particular statute, doesn't happen to apply to the president and the vice president. And I know he's been crowing about that quite a bit. Every other president has just said, well, I'm going to act as if it did apply to me because the people working for me are bound by a criminal statute. I certainly ought to behave the same way. But apparently we don't have that attitude in this administration.
Yeah, the lack of a sense of honor is amazing to me. But Trump has always lived by the rule that the rules don't apply to him. And until you tell him they do and actually take him to court, you're not going to change that, and nothing has changed since he became president in that regard.
Well, yes, that's the big problem, and he has been taken to court by our group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, has been taken to court by some members of Congress and by the State Attorney General of Maryland, the State Attorney General of the Attorney General of the District of Columbia on that same issue. So we'll see what the court says. But Congress ought to be getting involved in investigating what's going on.
What do you do? I'll let you go on this, and I appreciate it. I hope we can do it again, because I know this might make you uncomfortable, Professor, but I'm a fan. I really am. You just don't seem like the kind of guy that wants fans.
No. I want an honest government.
Yeah, right. We both want a better government. We want it immediately. But in a time where there seems to be less honor, less ethics, and less do the right thing than ever before, how do we fix our government when those that have to change the rules are the ones that make the rules?
Well, I think we may have to replace the members of Congress if they don't get their act together. Their first opportunity is 2018. I've been a Republican all my life, but I'm not going to let party politics get in the way of having effective government. They got to stand up to this White House, but it's not stops with the nonsense, all the alternative facts, and the race baiting, and the all of it. And tell the White House to get their act together. If members of Congress won't do that, we're going to have to put some new people into Congress, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. Doesn't matter as much as having people in there do their job.
Yeah, get it right. Say hi to my friends in the Twin Cities. Had 5 great years here. It's one of my favorite places. And you're smack dab in the middle of Minneapolis summer, which lasts at least until July 15th.
Yeah, absolutely.
all the best. And by the way, you can follow Richard Painter on Twitter, RWPUSA. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. he's an old cowboy. You know, this is a guy who's Harvard, Yale, but just every, you could, Richard Painter's the kind of guy, I feel like if you asked him the time, he'd go, oh, get a watch.
I'd just like to be a student in one of his classes.
Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah, the first time you come up with an excuse on why you didn't get your work done.
Mr. Cochran, please stand up.
Here's a dime, call your mother.
Grill you.
But he's right. It's not about Republicans and Democrats. It's about doing the right thing and doing the right thing more than we're doing it now, which is rarely. Eric Edelstein's on the road, but he's going to join us by phone in a second. And what I'd like to get from you two today, at least in part, is what do you do with a candidate, or in this case, an elected individual, the most important one, the president, who doesn't prepare for big events? How would you get him ready for an event like the Putin meeting tomorrow? And what do you do if he's not listening? I'll ask you both.
Is he really on the road, or is he at his house like he was last time?
He may be hiding. Okay. Yeah, he may be hiding. We'll 7:22, and Mary's back first with the traffic trouble spots. Eric Edelstein will join us here in a few minutes. All right, so Pat, why don't you answer this question for me that I threw out before, and that is, if you have a candidate who's not a good listener, or in this case, the president who's already been elected, and you have to prepare him for a big meeting, what do you do?
Probably nothing until she sees some consequence from it. He continues to get away with it, and I think his target audience is who it is, so I don't think there's much you can do.
So inside the White House, and I know you're not calling and talking to these guys with any regularity, but you know some of these guys. Inside the White House, what is your best guess as to how they are trying to handle President Trump and get the best out of him, whatever that means?
I think Reince Priebus, who's a good friend, who's the chief of staff, is probably just trying to do damage control daily. He probably has the hardest job in the world right now, and keep him within a reasonable box, so there's not a catastrophe. And I think he's done an okay job the last 4 or 5 weeks doing that. But it's Donald Trump. He's a larger-than-life personality. He's got his own base that he appeals to, and he's going to do what he's going to do. Last week's tweets were, to me, just something I'd never thought I'd ever see. There's not much you can do, but on the other side of it, and I think there are a lot of people that feel this way, some of the policy things he's doing, particularly rolling back some of the regulations, maybe the tax plan, rolling back Obamacare, a lot of people in this country like. So whether or not he's a goofball on some of the other things, a lot of the policy things, a lot of people like.
But a lot of people so far is adding up to 35%. Take away the Wall Street run that Wall Street continues to be on. 35% isn't enough to keep the House. 35% isn't enough to keep the Senate. And 35% certainly wouldn't win re-election in 2020.
When does he
get that message?
Well, I think that from what I've seen here in Illinois, that the president has his own kind of independent brand that hasn't spilled over. And as soon as you see that spill over or affecting these congressional House races, then you'll probably see people running away. But right now, people are staying with him, and he's kind of floating along. But 35% is not a great number, but presidents typically have a rough time in the first term, and this is no exception. But
this is lower than before.
No, this is. I'm not making excuses for a lot of it. It's terrible. But again, when you've got the market doing what it's doing, you've got some policies that people like, when the economy seems to be improving, no matter what he does, it's pretty tough to knock him down.
You think it is?
Yeah, I do. I mean, for 2 years, we said these things that you can't do that he gets away with. I don't like any of it. I'm not saying it's good. And I agree with Chuck. The attack on the media is terrible, but I think they play into it by responding.
And making it personal.
And making it, like he said, making it personal. And, and Eric and I talked about this weeks ago. If everything's an outrage, then nothing's outrageous. He does a lot of stupid many stupid things, but there are some good things. But if everything he does is an outrage, people tune out.
Right, and that's part of the problem, because when you're chasing stuff like how often he plays golf and what he's eating, you know, these are problems Melania should have with him. It's not a problem that we should have with him.
And another argument I've seen and seen polling out that some people, when he says, I'm not a politician, and didn't give speech like he gave today or a press conference, whatever that clip was, some people make the excuse, well, he's not a politician. Even though he's president of the United States, he's not a politician. That's just how non-politicians behave. But to me, it's more, it's commander-in-chief and leader of the free world. You're not a politician, but you are commander-in-chief, and you need to act like it.
That's the thing that I think troubles me the most, especially now with the North Korea threat that's out there, is the fact that there are still people, and good people, you know, friends of yours, friends of mine, who will go, well, he's learning the job. This isn't a greeter at Walmart. This isn't a guy making coffee at Starbucks. Yeah, he is entitled to learn the job over a period of time. But it is incredible to our lack of confidence and the lack of confidence in the USA around the world when he learns it on camera and on Twitter.
Right. And the presidents are judged, I think, on critical moments on how they handle things. Like, like President Reagan at Reykjavik walking away from a deal and got ended up ending the Cold War because he walked away from that deal. I can give many examples of presidential courageous decision making that helped the United States. With this guy, I don't think a lot of people think that he has the depth of the understanding of the office and the history that to make those kind of decisions. And he's got two big challenges in Russia and North Korea. So we'll see if he does the right thing. But I think you see the G20 summit, 19 of the 20 countries, and we're the 20th, have no confidence in him. That's not good for the United States.
You got a pair of tickets to Peter and the Starcatcher to get your mind off politics, playing at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center July 13th through August 20th. Discover the origin story of Peter Pan and the Neverland you never knew. You played Tinkerbell, didn't you?
Don't tell anybody that.
Get tickets today at metropolisarts.com. Again, that's metropolisarts.com.
That was
Eric. Oh,
that was Adelstein? Is he on yet?
That was acting in his family. Seventh caller is a winner for those tickets now at 312-981-7200. The big story is next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Last Friday, we were making a great deal of progress in a very bipartisan way. This still has to be taken up by the House. We'll see what happens there.
Representatives should be doing their job. They should be in Springfield. It is outrageous that we have this sham session.
In the Senate, one of the senators was literally having major cancer treatments, was brought up here from St. Louis so that he could cast that vote. Speaker Madigan decided not to bring his members back today.
This is not just a slap in the face to Illinois taxpayers. This is a 2x4 smacked across the forehead.
We'll talk budget with Pat Brady coming up here in a few minutes, because you're in and out of Springfield all the time. But I am curious as to why Madigan's pussyfooting around taking this final override vote of the governor's veto. I would think you wouldn't want people to have extra time to think about their vote if you've got them on your side.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the reason. There's a couple of theories, but I probably is good for everybody to spend a little quality time apart since they've been locked down there for the last 15 days. But they're going to do it today at 1:30. And it's
it is
be over
today.
Huh?
It is today.
It is today, yeah.
If everybody shows up.
I think they'll show.
Okay. More on that coming up. Yes?
I just want to know why. Why are these Republicans who were so steadfast in what they wanted with Governor Rauner now switching sides? Is it just to...
They're going to keep the votes. But it's been remarkable in the last 48 hours, 72 hours. Some of the comments have been made towards people on both sides. Our guest last week, remember Mike Zaleski, just getting abused by people. I know the Republicans have been, and that's a real bad development, I think. Bad stuff.
We'll allegedly have a budget.
Yeah, no, I believe they will override the governor's veto today, 1:30.
It won't be balanced, though.
It's the Madigan budget.
Right.
It's tax hike Mike.
Right. So, all right, I want to switch gears here for just a second, then we'll come back to it. Eric Edelstein joins us live from the road. He's in Iowa, because who wouldn't be this time of year?
Never too soon, Steve.
Iowa's got their own state financial issues. So I don't know what you're doing there unless you're fixing them. But let me pose the same question to you that I did to Pat Brady. And this example doesn't necessarily apply to Chris Kennedy, but whether it's Chris Kennedy or anybody from a candidate standpoint, Trump's got this meeting with Putin tomorrow. You've got a candidate in the past or somebody that you've worked with who isn't a good listener or not a good preparer. What do you do to make sure they're ready for the meeting and don't blow it up?
Well, you chew your nails and you white knuckle it a lot. I mean, I think it's kind of what Pat said. But the one thing you try to do, and for a guy like Trump, I don't know if it would work, but you simplify the thing and you give him a note card and you say there's 3 points here or 4 points. And I don't care what else comes into your pea brain mind or the things you want to say.
Well, that's the stuff you say on the inside. On the outside to the candidate, you say, here's what we want to do.
Yeah, and you say, this meeting is a failure if these 3 points aren't made. Say whatever you want, but you got to say these 3 things. These 3 things have to come up. Now, you know, sometimes they follow it. More often than not with this guy, I imagine he doesn't. But you can try.
And this meeting tomorrow, Pat and Eric, with Putin, is it as big as we're making it out to be, or we know the outcome already?
I don't know what Pat thinks. I think it's a bit of a media construct. I don't think that much is going to change in terms of the way the president's perceived internationally or domestically. I think they're going to do a grin and grip and talk about how he looked into his soul and he was really tough with him, but he's an okay guy, and then the world's going to move on. So I don't think it's that big a deal.
I agree, but I guess maybe he has to, but why is he even taking the meeting? He just elevates Putin, and this is a guy that, from what we've seen, had at some point or somehow tried to interfere with our investigations, which to me is an act, our elections, which to me is an act of war. Why do you even meet with him?
The only domestic and international win for the president is to be a kick-ass tough guy.
You don't need to meet with him.
To be Richard Painter. So if you're not going to be that guy, don't take the meeting.
And I may be wrong on that. Eric, maybe he has to at this summit, but I don't know why he has to take the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the G20, right? They're all going to be there. I guess he doesn't have to have a private meeting, but that may be more of a story if he didn't. But maybe that would look tougher. I don't know. I don't understand strategically how he calculates anything. But I do think there's a sense of like, oh, this is this big moment. But it's more of a, you know, like an Apprentice episode of like, you know, the final conflict. But
he knows he can't fire anybody, right? Like he can't fire another world leader.
I'm not sure.
He knows
I'm
that,
not
doesn't
sure
he?
Sure about that. I don't know if you read the briefing on that, you know.
But think of the two people meeting here, the former KGB leader with Donald Trump.
Right.
You're not building my confidence.
No, Putin's an evil guy. I mean, he has people killed, and he's been doing this forever with the former Apprentice star.
Do I have this memory? Is my memory right about this? I believe I'm right about this. When Putin, in one of his early meetings with Angela Merkel, when she became chancellor of Germany, she has a fear of dogs. And he brought his Labrador Retriever into the meeting, just a mind gamer. Am I remembering that right?
Well, you might. And George Bush tells a story about Putin and his dog, and he brings in this dog, and so Bush brings in a bigger dog. I think and this is Bush. I saw him give a speech. He called. I go, that's a nice little effete dog you have there.
Well, guys, you know what they say that partisanship ends at the borders. I think with our president abroad, we should say he does have strengths, and he could challenge Putin to a tweet off. And you know, I'm not sure. Yeah. Putin would stand a chance in that contest.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Know your strengths and exercise them. What's the story?
You're absolutely right. It was 2007 in Sochi. The two had a meeting at Putin's residence, and he let his dog in. Angela Merkel has the fear of dogs, and the picture is just so telling. She's kind of sitting back in her chair, and he's smirking. Yeah, he denies that he set his dog on her, like sick.
He denies that he kills people.
I know.
This is a bad guy.
Did he have his shirt on, or was his shirt off?
He did in
this
case.
Shirt is on, yeah.
Now, I will say this, because if Putin really wants to frighten Trump, let the truth in, because that's the thing that really scares Trump the most. All right, so that meeting will go off tomorrow, and I tend to agree with both of you. I think we have made this bigger than it is, because I do think we know the outcome, and I hope I'm wrong about this, but I think it's going to be a disappointing outcome, and the president needs to stand up and be the president, and I don't see it happening. Moving on, before we let you go, Eric, you work with Chris Kennedy, and we're going to break down the budget stuff with Pat here in a second as much as possible. But Chris Kennedy and J.B. Pritzker would be your Democrat front runners. J.B. Pritzker's running a million commercials. When do you guys go after that, and why is he better than Pritzker for the job?
Well, we're still about 9 months away from this election, so there'll be plenty of time for ads when I think people don't get sick of him. But look, Kennedy has had a really varied career. I mean, he's been in business. He's been in the public sector as the head of the U of I. He's started a not-for-profit to help feed people. But I think more importantly, he's got a broad vision. You know, I think our party right now is stuck in this, should we be the party of Obama or the party of the white working class? And I think Kennedy says we have to reject that false choice. We got to be the party of everybody. And if we're going to get back to restoring the promise of this state and to some extent this country, we have to put forth an economic agenda, an education agenda that kind of lifts all the boats. And I think you're starting to see it, and you'll see it over the course of this campaign, him laying out a very specific agenda of what that vision and that message. We can't just be, as much as we want to be against Trump and Rauner, the party that's just against stuff. We have to be for stuff, and I think that's the advantage that Kennedy brings.
And we'll have plenty of time to get into this in greater detail, but the next time you're in studio, which hopefully is, you know, soon, you continue to avoid the program, next time you're in studio, I want to talk to you about what he will do about Madigan, because it's clear Madigan is some sort of movie character who never dies. So he'll be 150, and he'll still be in the state legislature. So how will Chris Kennedy handle that would be my question for you down the road. But in the meantime, here's words I say all the time. Enjoy Iowa.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Right, see you later.
See you, Eric.
Pat, when we come back, let's talk budget, what you saw, what you think will happen going forward from here, and why it happened the way it happened. But first, here's Mary. Mm-hmm. 755 CLTV joins us at 9, and we appreciate that. And the 3 o'clock hour of the Roe, Con, and Anna DeBlanta situation. Pat Brady's here. Do we say thank you? We get a budget, which we need to have, but we also get a 1.2% state tax hike that's permanent.
No, 32%.
Or 1.2% from 3.7. Is it 3.5 or 3.7? 3.75 to 4.9, whatever it is.
4.95, yeah.
32% is the actual number. But we get the tax hike, but my point is we get nothing else. We don't get term limits. We don't get any other reforms. We get nothing.
Right, and that's, I think...
So do you say thank you? What's the etiquette?
Well, I don't know what you say, but this is not a great deal for the state, and I think that's why the governor vetoed it, and that's why I think you're seeing a lot of people that are... I think this politically, I don't want you to put it in political terms, but for the governor, I think is a win, because Madigan just wanted this tax hike. He could have done it 2 years ago. We get no reforms. You're going to pay more money for this great, efficient thing we call the state government of Illinois, and nothing's going to change.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any taxpaying resident in Illinois, and I'm going out on a limb here, saying, oh, yes, I'm so excited for this 32% permanent tax.
Permanent.
Well, we talked about this yesterday. If you're a family that makes the median income in Illinois, which is 60 grand,
yeah,
you're going to pay $750 and change more. There's a lot of things you could do with that money.
Yeah, and I think people are at the point where they understand, given the situation the politicians put us in, that we maybe need a tax increase, but we need some reform so we're not in the same place 5 years down the road. And there's no reform in this particular piece of legislation. So it's just the same old, same old. And I think that's where the problem is politically for tax hike Mike Madigan.
So are they pushing this through, or is he pushing this through just to avoid junk bond status? And really, what does that mean if we're so close to being declared, you know, or this horrendous
junkie
status?
Yeah, I think the people equate junk, but they don't normally pay attention to the bond ratings,
right.
But junk bond equates with bankrupt. And I think politically, that's where they got, and that's where they had to get this through 2 years down the road. At least the speaker saw it that way, but even the bond rating agencies today are saying without some structural reforms.
Yeah, why would they not still consider it?
We're still considered a mess, even though we had a big, huge tax increase.
This could go through, we'll get this huge tax hike, and we could still be declared, we could still get junk bond status.
Arguably, but we still have a low rating anyway, which costs us a lot of money. We saw last week $70,000 a year for the Chicago Public, a day to borrow money.
Right.
To keep the schools open.
It's just bad government, bad policy, and the same person's been down there for 46 years.
Is it balanced?
Close, but not. And it doesn't...
It's not a legal budget?
They pass illegal budgets every year down there. They're never balanced, even though they're constitutionally supposed to be. And it doesn't take care of the past due bills.
What is the argument that a couple people tried to make that there's a pension fix in this budget?
There's a pension fix that had been proposed by leader President Cullerton, Senate President Cullerton, and Jim Durkin, but it doesn't go far enough. There is a constitutional problem with amending the pension system in the state, and this doesn't go far enough, but it is somewhat of a fix, but it doesn't overcome the rest of the deficiencies in this so-called budget.
School funding is the math still hasn't been fully decided, or it has?
None of the reforms that anybody wants or the state needs are in this budget.
So there's still a chance that we're going to be talking about whether the schools are even open?
No, I think that they've said the schools are going to open.
Why are we believing them?
Well, there is funding there. It's just a matter of going forward and not continuing to go into more debt, continue to run a deficit. But they didn't fix the school funding formula, which they need to do to make sure that the schools are fully and fairly funded. The big thing is there's no property tax relief. Mike Madigan is asking the people of the state to pay more money.
Right.
Nobody's getting raises anymore, but Mike Madigan got a raise.
Right.
And they want the citizens of the state to pay more, but no property tax relief at all.
And is the reason there's no property tax relief is because without the appeals of the property taxes as they stand, the majority of which go through his office from a business standpoint, he wouldn't get paid?
I wouldn't make that connection, although there is some connection to the system up here. He does mainly commercial properties.
Yeah, that's what I said, from a business standpoint.
So the real rub is the residential properties that are every year or in this system that's not fair to the people, the lower income people, and people like J.B. Pritzker get big reductions in their property tax.
Any scenario this doesn't pass, this is going to happen today, right?
I mean, there's always a scenario down there, but I think it's going to pass.
And then it goes into effect immediately, or because it's been 2 years.
Yeah, it's the current year budget, so yeah.
And then when do we continue this argument?
Starts again next session.
Which is?
It'll start in the fall.
Okay. And
because we've been behind so many years, but there are a lot of problems with. Doesn't take care of past due bills. Doesn't do any of the pension reforms. No property tax relief. No school funding formula. No consolidation of local government. No term limits. None of the things that the state desperately needs. No workers' compensation reform. None of the things.
Other than that, it's perfect.
No, it's really a bad, bad deal
for the
state.
Happy Thursday.
Jeez. But this is what happens when you leave one person in power for as long as he's been in power.
Mental health funding, abuse shelter funding, early education funding, special needs funding. Is that in there?
You know, it's a document of several hundred pages that was dumped on the House.
I haven't memorized it yet.
I think it keeps the doors open for now for many of the domestic violence shelters.
But they're still living on a razor's edge.
Right.
It's
not like they're all going
to
be.
Stay in business.
We're still running a deficit. We're still spending more than we take in.
Listen, everybody listening can do something about this. You can let your state reps know that if you're pleased we have a budget, great. But you can let them know this is no way to run your state, and you will not put up with it, and they will be voted out. You will not support them going forward.
There's been a real bad.
Can we switch to a parliamentary situation where we can just change the government?
I'm not sure if that works either, but there has been a real bad.
Wouldn't you take a shot at this point?
I would think we need a constitutional convention to change a lot, particularly with the pension system, particularly with term limits. We do need to probably rewrite our constitution.
Absolutely.
You know the queen. Give her a call. Give her a
ring. I want no part of the state of Illinois. Pat, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
And before you go, thank you as well to our friend, Emil Esposito.
Oh, the greatest.
Emil Esposito hosted Pat and I out at the beautiful Glen Club yesterday. But more importantly, Emil may have saved this golf summer by simply looking at me and going, what the hell are you doing? And fixing my grip. And then looking at you in 4 minutes on the range and fixing you.
I've never hit the golf ball that far.
Yeah, you hit it far. You did. You hit it
EmilEspositoGolf.com.
Yeah, I'm telling you. The man can teach.
He played on the tour, too, in the 60s. The stories he was telling us were fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of them we could tell on the air, but none of the ones he heard yesterday. Thanks, Emil. We love you. It's 8:03. We're back after this with the news on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Live at Channel 9, where Dean Richards is standing by.
Hi, buddy.
How are you?
I'm well-rested, ready to go.
I will congratulate you as well. I mentioned this to Nick because he also recommended the movie, but I saw Baby Driver. It's as good as you said it was.
How about that?
Yeah, it's, I've never seen anything done that way, and that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the music is...
crazy.
It's a heist movie. It's a thriller. It's comedy. It's romance, but... it's like a, it's a musical like you've never seen before.
It would be like if I stood up from the chair and then moseyed out the door, because I don't walk, I mosey, and you sent music to every step.
Every perfectly synchronized music to every step. I'm just trying to get past the concept of you getting out of the chair, though.
I'm trying to see if Costco has knees I could buy, because I'm going to need more than two, I think.
You think so?
Install them.
Well, you're pretty active. You may wear out your first pair.
That's exactly right. Coming up on the list, Kim Kardashian, or I should say the Kardashians, Tupac, Scarlett Johansson. I still can't believe she's dating this dude, but, you know, I can talk to her. I mean, ever since I dumped her, she really is going off the rails.
You messed her up after that.
Jay-Z is in the news. Paul McCartney tickets maybe in your future. And something about a beaver.
What?
I'm just telling you, that's something about a beaver. A few kids listening going, how do you do a professional tease in broadcasting? Something about a beaver coming up.
Hey, Beavis, he said beaver.
That's coming up on the program. How are things at Channel 9 this morning?
Oh, it's quiet around here today. Larry, Robin, and Paul are all off today.
I did look up. You are the only one from the A-team that showed up for work.
I'm the only regular. Anna and Pat are here, but they're both around town. Goofing around, they're out in a baseball field or someplace in Rosemont. So in studio, I am the only one who is actually in house. You know, we had behind the scenes this morning.
Oh, trouble!
Lauren Jiggetts, who you know is going to be starting on the WGN TV Morning News.
Great hire, by the way.
Next week, thank you. I was responsible for that myself.
I love Lauren. I do.
I worked
she's
that
great.
Deal out myself.
Love Dan. Love Lauren. Love her sister. They're all good.
In addition to my real estate sideline that I have. I'm also a talent agent, and we worked that out. I'm going to have her write a book. I think that's important.
Oh, that's a good call
for all talent.
By the way, anytime Dean is able or I'm able to work that inside joke in, we both get paid.
Totally inside joke that only we understand.
Yeah.
So she was here observing today. She was sitting behind the scenes.
What can you chowderheads teach her that she doesn't already know?
Well, I don't think it's that so much. I think it's just seeing where the bathroom is.
Yeah, the important stuff.
You know, getting up early. That's new for her, getting up super early.
Yeah.
Because she'll be on from 4 to 6 and then reporting on the rest of the morning show. So, you know, she's got a early, early schedule, but... you know, get a little taste of what the WGN Morning News is about. It's a little different than her previous job.
Yeah, does Lourdes know that I'm going to start touting Lauren Jiggetts now?
No.
Because Lourdes has dumped us like a bad habit?
You get what you deserve, I guess.
wait. Lourdes
said,
or me?
She no, said she I'm was going to try and stop by this week.
Was
and
she?
And see us.
It's Thursday.
I know.
Yeah. Big time Lourdes.
Steve doesn't have all day.
I know. He's
no,
still 10:01.
I mean, listen, if you get, no, I'm telling you, if you get here by 10:15, there's a chance you'll see me get in my car. So.
Oh, that's that late now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Steve is very, very busy trying to get out of the chair.
I was talking to Abigail Grace about the Lourdes problem.
Oh, I saw her picture, by the way, your son Ross. I don't know if you remember him.
I do, yeah.
He's one of my favorites. Posted a photograph of little Abigail Grace. Cute as a button, by the way.
That's some kid, isn't it?
Holy smokes, cute as a button.
That is some kind of kid. Again, all the other grandkids listening now, you should quit. There's no way you can compete with Abigail Grace. But I was talking to her about the Lourdes problem I'm having, and she looked at me and she said, banana pops. In other words, move on. Give me a banana.
Right. Wow. Sorry, she didn't say no. Like, your problem is no big deal.
Yeah. Well, she was thinking it.
Yeah.
I could tell by the look in her eyes. It's 8:18. More with Dean in a moment.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
We have monitors here in the studio tuned to several channels to keep an eye on the world. One of which, of course, is always Channel 9. And Dean, I just watched Anna Balaval.
Anna Balaval!
Field a ground ball and make a decent throw.
Yeah, she's... And she has virtually no baseball experience whatsoever.
She's beautiful and in great shape, but she's not athletic. She's not a sports type.
Normally she's not, but I saw her field the ball. I've seen her do a few things on the field today, and I gotta say I'm pretty impressed with her abilities.
I think she'd be great for the Cubs right now to finally break out and get back to where they were last year.
Yeah, she and Pat Tomasulo, they're playing catch. Only it was like Pat was underhand throwing the ball like you would a 3-year-old, and most of the time she caught it.
So
that's one small step for man.
And you might not recognize Pat because he was cocky. Oh wait, that's what he does. Okay, that's his move.
By the way, she looked fabulous in her Bandits uniform.
Yes.
You got to tell her that, Dean.
That's a cool stadium out there in Rosemont.
Yeah,
that's
neat.
It is.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is.
I'd like to rent that for the weekend. Get a little wiffle ball going on.
How fun would it be to do the morning show out there one day?
We should do that.
And have a listener game.
Yeah, wiffle ball tournament.
Yeah, have a listener.
Listeners versus us.
Yeah. Right. Done. We'll organize it later. But right now we have Beaver News. First, let's go to the Kardashians. What's happening there?
Oh, this is so crazy.
Unrelated, by the way, to the headline.
This is so crazy. Well, sort of not. The there's a crazy social media war going on between Rob Kardashian and his
kid's got a bright future.
Well, he's got a bankable name, that's for sure. And Blac Chyna, I think that they're
Would you like
still
to explain to the
married.
Listeners who Blac Chyna is?
Blac Chyna is a model, a rapper.
A poor choice for your wedding set. It's Blac Chyna.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right.
Unless you're like Marilyn Manson and
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. And they're having a social media war, even though they're still a couple legally.
They're a couple. I think they're still legally married. I'm not positive about that.
Okay.
Because one week they are all lovey-dovey, and the next week they're throwing things at each other. Yesterday they were throwing really graphic and expletive-laced posts on to each other. On Instagram until Instagram shut it down, then on Twitter, and then on Snapchat, going back and forth. Kardashian accusing Blac Chyna of infidelity, of drug use, of taking advantage of him financially. Then he went ahead and posted some very graphic X-rated photographs of her.
This is a problem because of the revenge porn law. What is it?
In California, in many states, but they live in California, and there is revenge porn law that could put Rob Kardashian in jail for 6 months if that happens. But she responds and is alleging that he had beaten her. Among the many things that she posted back, I'm supposed to be quiet because you're a Kardashian. The light will come to light, she says.
And then that makes sense.
And then Rob went, what?
Right. Well, here's the part that, I mean, that's the Kardashian sideshow. But the part that really cracked me up is when the rest of the Kardashian family expressed their anger about this because they're demonstrating public spectacle. You know, the Kardashians hate public
they
spectacle.
They always hate that. They've been on record. Ever since the mother promoted the daughter's sex tape, they've been against making themselves the center
quiet,
of attention.
Low-key. It's just killing the Kardashian family. And in a rare moment of actual logic said, all of this is going to hurt the couple's 8-month-old daughter. At some point, the daughter's going to read all this.
I think that ship has sailed.
And you know, too, Dean, I mean, you talk with a lot of these celebrities. If you're going to post hate and you're going to spew all this negativity, learn how to spell. I'm so tired of trying to decipher. I'm going to send you message that he going to... I don't know. Yeah. I can't decipher it.
That's why you need Rosetta Stone for Blac Chyna and Kardashian.
And spell check.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Tupac Shakur, who famously dated Jada Pinkett Smith and Madonna and other people, there's a letter going up for auction. This is pre-texting kids.
This is 1995. This is kids back in the day. You would actually take a piece of paper and...
write a love letter or a breakup letter.
Yeah, pencil or pen or something. And when you rub the pencil or the pen on the paper, it leaves a mark. And you can sometimes you can make words. You can spell letters and words.
And then you would put them in a thing called an envelope,
yeah,
or an envelope if you prefer. You would then lick the paper.
I like that part.
You'd lick the paper and close it and then put a stamp, also lickable.
Right. Amazingly, it would show up at someone else's door.
Within 2 days.
Yeah, within a couple of days. And then they could read what it was that you put on this. What do they call it again? Oh, piece of paper. A letter. Tupac Shakur in 1995 wrote one of these to Madonna, breaking up with her.
Mm-hmm.
And in this letter, he readily admits that the reason that he was breaking up with her is because of her race, essentially saying that it's not a big deal for you to be seen with the black man. It'll make you seem more open and exciting. But he says for himself, he feels like he would be letting down half the people who made him what he is. He said, I never wanted to hurt you, but kind of it is what it is.
I'm going to give you some translation of this from a male standpoint. He didn't have the guts to break up with Madonna face to face. And having met Madonna, I wouldn't either. So he sent her the letter, and he did the race thing. He just didn't want to date Madonna anymore.
I guess it's safer saying, I'm not dating you because you're white, or better than saying, I'm not dating you because you're nuts.
Exactly. There's no upside to that.
Allegedly. Yeah, I've heard.
Jay-Z's in the news.
Jay-Z's new album that has been out a total of 6 days.
It's called The Wheels on the Bus.
It's
Jay-Z Sings Kids Songs.
Called 444.
Oh, I got a different one then.
And it's only been released on his streaming service, Tidal.
Mm-hmm.
No retail sales whatsoever, and the album was just certified platinum.
That's a lot of downloads, as a kid.
That is amazing, yeah. Absolutely amazing. He released the first video from the album today, which is called Letter to O.J. It's somewhat about O.J. Simpson, but the content of the song is about Jay-Z's perception about what it's like to be black in America. Very interestingly, it's animated and in the style of those old, pretty racist cartoons that the major studios used to put out back in the 30s and 40s, where
big lips, giant eyes,
black people were cannibals, butlers, and all that. It's in the style of that. Now it is N-word everywhere in it. That's the main chorus of the song, N-words. Mm. So some people may find it offensive. You're going to check it out, but
what is our rule
out there?
If you're not black, don't use the word.
Don't ever, really. I'm uncomfortable even saying the phrase N-word now.
Scarlett Johansson's got a new boyfriend?
It is Colin Jost, the Weekend Update guy from Saturday Night Live. They had dated when they were canoodling, let's say, when she had guested on the show.
Yeah, they were making out in the post-show party.
After parties and things like
that's
that.
That's when I met her, too.
And then
not that party. It was the previous one.
When Steve was also making out with Colin Jost.
No, I thought it was Scarlett Johansson. So, okay. They're both so pretty.
They're very gorgeous. Both. Well, it's an honest mistake.
It's dark in the back of the bar.
I can understand. So they dated for a little while. They didn't date for a little while. And now they've been seen in some watering holes in New York again.
Hmm.
They can't keep their hands off each other. So apparently they're...
sounds like Scarlett.
They're a thang again.
Paul McCartney tickets, how do we win these?
WGNTV.com/contest. We're giving away not only tickets to the concert, it's July 26th at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park, but also we've got an opportunity to go to the sound check, which is super.
That's huge.
That's super cool, dude.
That's really cool.
Go to the sound check for this. So sound check and then the show, WGNTV.com/contests.
Well, that's really good.
How you left the biggest story of the morning for last.
Yeah, exactly.
You are just a master.
I really am. Well, it's not my first
stacking,
day.
Stacking stories, as they say.
I'm going to give you the headline. Dean will give you the story. Beaver loses 55 pounds. First off, I didn't even know that was possible. Secondly, what's the story?
I didn't know that even beavers got to be that heavy.
Yeah.
I'm not a beaver expert.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the story is about the former child star, Jerry Mathers, who played the beaver on TV.
Oh, well, that's different.
He grew up to be an owner of a catering company, among other things.
So he ate a bunch.
He said he attributed his weight gain to that, a weight gain that left him diagnosed type 2 diabetes, and the doctors gave him 3 to 5 years to live.
Wow.
So he got serious about, he sold the catering company, got serious about diet, serious about exercise, and the beaver is now 55 pounds lighter. Take that for out of context, Nick DiGilio.
How about that? How about that?
He's 55 pounds lighter. He is now pre-diabetic. He was able to reverse full-on type 2 diabetes. He's 69 years old, and he's doing well.
Reminds me of the great line from the show, and I couldn't tell you which episode it was, but when Mrs. Cleaver looked at Mr. Cleaver and said, Ward, doesn't the beaver look great tonight? You know, it was the lighting and stuff after he lost the weight.
Mm-hmm. Is that what she meant?
I'm familiar with that. I watch the reruns often. I don't ever think I've
You don't remember that?
I don't think I've ever
seen it. Ward, take a look at the beaver. Doesn't it look terrific?
It was the director's cut, Dean.
Dean's praying, Dean's praying to God he's not in a meeting with me today.
I'm not coming anywhere close to this today.
Goodbye.
I'd rather talk about the Kardashians.
Patrick Sharp from your Chicago Blackhawks is back and joins us after the big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Kane over the Oilers line on a 3-on-1 over to Sharp. A drive, he scores! One-time shot by Patrick Sharp went just past Dubnyk's pad. Kane put it in front. Sharp with a shot. He scores! It's a 5-on-3 power play goal. Got it to Sharp. Breaks over the wild line. Left circle. Shoot. He scores! Tried to feed a pass through Johnson. Took it away. Lost it to Sharp. He shoots. He scores! Patrick Sharp, Johnny on the spot. Over sticking down ice into the Lightning zone. The collision. Sharp with the gimme moves. And shoots. He scores! Patrick Sharp with his first goal of the final.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about.
Well, I was excited last year about Soup coming back. I'm excited now about Sharpie being back in town. And again, not just because it takes some pressure off of me with all the attention from the ladies, but seeing Sharpie back in a Blackhawk sweater, that's exactly where he belongs. Welcome home. It's great that you're back.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me on. Hey, everybody. It's good to be back. I'm excited to be a Blackhawk again.
And I know you don't need us to go down this road, but here's the thing. Patrick Sharp is one of those guys that knows how blessed he is to play this game. But he could have made a lot of money in other places, and he wanted to play here. And just on behalf of fans, we appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, there comes a point where that stuff isn't that important. And what is important is playing with your friends, playing in the city that you want to be in. And the Blackhawks organization has been very generous to me over the years. And made it an easy decision to sign back with the Hawks.
Has this been talked about for a while? Did you know this was a possibility, or did it kind of come on fast?
It was a crazy week, to be honest with you. I knew in my heart, my wife knew that we wanted to go back to Chicago if it was a possibility. And, you know, being a free agent, it's something that at age 35 was a new experience for me. So I didn't know what to expect. I kind of went through the process and had some conversations with other teams, tried as best I could to make it the right decision. But at the end of the day, it was a no-brainer for the Sharp family to come back to Chicago.
Yeah, how much of it, Patrick, was about being back with this team, being back with the guys with whom you won 3 Stanley Cups, and you spent
the ones that are left.
The one, well, but there's still guys he won cups with, or and about your family.
Yeah, I mean, it's about that comfort level. It's about the familiarity. Played here for 10 years in Chicago and had some pretty good memories with some guys that are there still, and just wearing the jersey, the way that the entire organization treats the players, it's the best place to play in my opinion. And it's tough because I haven't been there for 2 years. It's starting to sink in a little bit more talking to you guys on the phone. We're going to get back to the city here shortly and get settled for the season, but you know, I can't wait to put the jersey on and let it sink in even more.
That first time you came back to the United Center 2 years ago as a member of the Dallas Stars, I know that you talked at the time about how good it was to see these guys and everything, but how difficult was it to play against guys with whom you'd been through so much?
Yeah, it wasn't fun at all, to be honest with you. It was cool to be back in Chicago. It was cool to be at the UC and see all those same faces, but that made me feel comfortable, and I think I I felt more relaxed on the ice in those situations, but I did not like playing against the guys and lining up against Johnny or Kaner or playing up against Duncan Siebes every shift. It wasn't the most fun thing to do, but at the end of the day, you're a hockey player and you gotta play hockey. Thank goodness we didn't play each other in a playoff series, or that would have been extra tough.
Yeah, and the thing is, you're not going to let up, right? I mean, you know, these are your pals. You know, they're practically family, but you got a job to do, so you're both going hard. Here's the one thing I think you're going to see, Sharpie, when you come back, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at convention too, and I think Dave, you'll back me up on this. Mm-hmm. Boy, Taser and Kane got old. Look how old they are. It's unbelievable, Sharpie, how old those two are.
Well, I can't wait to let them hear about it, because that's the first thing I'll tell them when I see them.
Oh, yeah, let them know. Let them know. I didn't know how to break it to them. It's amazing to think those guys as well have been in the league for 10 years, and they're really, you know, by the typical NHL superstar legend calendar, they should just be hitting their prime right about now.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing about coming back for me on a personal level is I spent 10 years with the team, 10 with, I think, Dunks and Siebes were there for all 10. They were there before I was. And then we draft Johnny and Kaner, and they come in as 18, 19-year-old rookies, and you kind of see their development on and off the ice throughout the last 7, 8 years. And then, you know, now they're, in my opinion, still two of the top players in the league. And if you're going into a season, they're two guys that you definitely want on your side. And it's just kind of cool to see the maturity of both of them and see the arcs of their career. And they certainly have a lot of hockey left, and I'm glad to be on their side again.
When you were coming up, the NHL was coming out of a very dark area. You know, you had the strike in 04, and the league wasn't getting the attention it certainly gets now. Not only is the league stronger than ever, the players are bigger and faster. And I would think, Sharpie, correct me if I'm wrong, it's harder than ever to win. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say. I mean, we had a good run there in Chicago, still putting pieces together to get back to that Stanley Cup level. I think that's one of the exciting things about playing for the Hawks is Stan Bowman and his staff are always going to put you as a player in the position to win a Stanley Cup. And you look across the league, and you said it, it's as competitive as it's been that I can remember. I mean, my 2 years in Dallas illustrate a pretty good story. The first year I was there, we win the Western Conference. The second year, we were bottom of the division and struggled to even come close to making the playoffs. So things change in a hurry. It's a competitive league, but it just speaks to how successful the Hawks have been in such a short period of time.
How about a Chicago Magazine Part 2 cover, the welcome home issue?
You want them with a shirt or without a shirt?
No, with how we looked before.
Oh, I see.
For the fans. For the team, for
this
teammates.
Isn't like the president of the United States where you see the before and after aging
right,
photo.
No.
I think Sharpie's still holding up okay.
Yeah, we might have to do a little extra Photoshop on that one. But you know, if I had any say, I'll pass that on to Ryan Hartman. I think he's got the long flowing hair and he's doing pretty good in that department. So I'll let him handle that kind of stuff.
Patrick, I know you really embraced and enjoyed Chicago too. What are you most looking forward to off the ice back in the city here?
Other than hanging out with us,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you guys first and foremost, that goes without saying. But, you know, just the neighborhood that we lived in, putting the kids in school. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old that.
How about that, by the way?
We'll be going to kindergarten. Yeah, it's crazy. Just the other day, I feel like we were in mid-season and I was leaving practice to go have Madeline, the first one, and now she's ready to start school. So it's time flies, but just that comfort level of being in the neighborhood, being in the same city that we spend so much time in. I know that my wife will be comfortable and relaxed being at home in Chicago, and hopefully that translates into playing some good hockey.
You mentioned, obviously, playing again, rejoining guys you played with before, Kane and Taves, but another guy who's coming back who is a former teammate of yours, Brandon Saad. What's going to be like to see him suit up for the Hawks again?
Yeah, great player, great person. Played with him for a handful of years, and it's tough when you're in the league and you see these guys on different teams. And we caught up when he was in Columbus and I was in Dallas, and certainly kept in touch over the years. So I know how excited he is to come back. And
can you believe, Sharpie, he's only 25 years old?
That's the crazy thing, is that he's only 25 years old.
I mean, he feels like he's been in the league 10 years.
Exactly. And he probably has. Who knows? I mean, the guy He's accomplished so much already, and he's only got the best years of his career ahead of him. So what a player to have in the locker room, on the ice, and it'll be fun to see him again.
Well, listen, we're thrilled to have you back and thrilled to be partners with the Chicago Blackhawks, and it's going to be a great fall and a great run. And we'll see you at convention. Have the best of your family, and have a safe trip back up here.
Yeah, always good to talk to you guys. Thanks for the partnership. We look forward to having a great season and having a lot of fun along the way.
All right, bud. Take care. See you later. That's Patrick Sharp from your Chicago Blackhawks. That's what should be. He should be from your Chicago Blackhawks.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the convention, by the way, is 2 weeks away, a little less than 2 weeks away.
I'm available. Now, a lot of times on that weekend, I'm not available. I'm available this year. So you and I are going to do something at this convention?
We kind of thought you weren't available this year, Steve, because the last couple of years.
Well, last couple of years, I wasn't available, but I am available this year.
They asked me, I said, well, I don't think Steve can. Because he's always.
I'm here. I'm announcing now to the Blackhawks that I am available for the convention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Phone's ringing.
Does this count as being asked, even though you.
Well, in the Blackhawks, case of the Blackhawks, when they ask, I almost always say yes.
Okay.
Yes. So you and I will do the opening ceremony
like we did the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And then when Roe tries to get to the microphone, we'll slap it away from him?
Of course.
Yeah.
That's Kevin? Fantastic. No way.
Yeah. There you go. That's all you need. Sounds good. So I look forward to seeing fans at the convention as well. All right, we got to get to traffic, and CLTV will join us in a few minutes. And 720 WGN, and that's Mary Vanderbilt. It is 9:10. We welcome to the Steve Cochran Show in studio, Ed Zofer, Ed, CEO of Seneca Global. Let's start there. What is Seneca Global?
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you.
Seneca Global is a basic outsourced product development firm. We're a tech company. We essentially help companies build and create software for all the various uses that are out there.
Well, Ed, you're a handsome devil, but I assume you're about my age, and guys our age generally don't have full careers in tech because computers, when we were coming up, were giant room-sized things.
Exactly.
That you would shove paper cards into. But you've been in this your whole life? Huh?
Yes, sir. I graduated here locally at Loyola University, started my career, God forbid, I'm going to say this on public radio or on radio, at 1981, started my career with a company called Arthur Anderson. Oh. Today's Accenture.
One of the Big Eight.
The Big Eight, correct. Yeah. So, that was a pretty big thing. And that's where I learned my tech skills. But back then, as you said, the computers filled rooms and cards were used. And what was on a floor about the size of this studio could power, a wristwatch today, literally.
I'm sure there's a
it
big
has gone a long way in the last three some decades for sure.
Big demand for tech talent in Chicago, I'm sure.
It's unbelievable. One of the reasons we are a company that's been successful is, a lot of issues have occurred. Back in 2000, I was president of a company called Whitman Hart here locally, and we had a company that we had acquired, and this is when the dot-com situation occurred. Remember in 2000, all the hype about the digital economy and all this great stuff. Back then, college graduates with a degree in computer science were, demanding ridiculous salaries, and they would job jump like crazy. And I'm seeing the exact same thing again today, 17 years later.
Well, you got 1871 here. You have the nerdery here on a smaller scale. But there's tons of tech development going on in all sectors. You got Google and Facebook going over in a district that previously was just empty lots.
Right.
So the redevelopment, the development that's going on is amazing. Where are all the jobs going to come from? I mean, the jobs are going to come from there. Where are the people for the jobs?
That's the fundamental question. That's the $64,000 question, Steve. In fact, one of the reasons that companies are struggling today, and there's a lot of news around the H-1B visas and all that kind of good stuff, but there's just a fundamental shortage. If you think about every device that exists, not just your Apple iPhone or Samsung device, but the computers that exist in your refrigerator, your automobile, the clocks, it's all code. Somebody's got to write that stuff. And unfortunately, back to 2000, once the kids who were now entering college in the mid-2000s or early 2000s, none of them got into tech, or not enough. So you see lately in these past couple of years the emphasis on STEM, right? Science, technology, engineering, and math to get the United States back in a groove to train more qualified technicians, scientists, mathematicians.
Right, because if you can't bring in immigrants because of politics to do the jobs, you've got to grow the jobs here, and there's a time problem in getting that done.
Absolutely. There's not enough proficiency in the amount of time that's required, and we all know how fast upgrades occur on your iPhone. Think about everything that has a piece of software associated with it. There's companies struggling or, in high competition for good talent to get their product to market, whether it's a device like a cell phone or something, piece of software you're using here in your computer studio every day. Somebody wrote all this stuff you guys are using, and that has to constantly be upgraded, and new ideas come up.
Can Can you teach someone to love code writing, or do you have to be a particular brain?
Well, I have three kids who none of them went into it, and they're all adults, and you know they work in various jobs. So right. I think the answer is, you know, anybody can learn it, but just like maybe we were kids, I wasn't great with math. I didn't care for algebra, but you know, I wanted
a
job.
You code writing, ones and zeros, it limited you?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Not to mention it got pretty boring. I like more the business side of it, the taking an idea and creating, you know, an application that makes it work. But generally, you know, either you want to do it or don't. A lot of kids today, I would argue, having adult children myself, don't want to sit at a desk hammering code. Now, some do.
So many kids are obviously millennials. Good. Twitter, Snapchat, they know all of this. The joke is if you want something fixed, you give your phone, your iPad, your
Absolutely.
Mac to someone younger. How does a younger...
Someone younger, a seven-year-old.
How about, how do the kids in college make themselves stand out?
Well, you got to learn. You got to be creative. I mean, what the user uses on Twitter or Snapchat and all that stuff, that's just using the application, writing behind it.
Yeah.
You know, people often think, you know, when you move a cursor and move your phone, there's code behind that. Somebody's writing something to make that interpretation to the machine. So that's not necessarily exciting things to do. Now, there's creativity involved. Sometimes you're coming up with new ideas for new applications. You know, somebody came up with Facebook, obviously, Zuckerberg. You had the Twitters of the world. Great. People love working on this stuff, but there's a lot of mundane things that need to be done in the old manufacturing company down the street that still needs systems to deal with supply chain, to deal with, you know, logistics or what have you.
We used to talk about 5-year plans, 10-year plans. I don't think you can plan more than 6 months in advance now.
In a business? For certainly not. But, you know, people have to make commitments in larger organizations to what their vision is because it takes time
Annual
to build software.
Budgets, things like that.
Budgets and, you know, what the competitive market landscape is looking like. Yeah. There's a lot of that. Right.
So how do you marry all of that? Does it start younger? Do we have to figure out how to make sure the high school curriculum?
I think there's a lot of that going on. I mean, I'm not an expert in the education space, but clearly, you know, giving kids, you know, many schools today are using no books, right? They're using iPads as the basic thing. And
That's why the handwriting's so good.
Right. whatever the technology, but introducing them early. And you're right, they all have a proficiency. They're not afraid of these technologies, not to use them, but to actually find the innovative thinking to go behind and say, how does that work? You know, when I was a kid, I worked on cars. I wanted to know how a carburetor worked. Right. I wanted to know how you made an engine work. So, you know, I dug in. So similarly with computers, I think the young generation needs to hopefully have an inner interest to do that.
Well, if we have, you know, we have tons of parents and grandparents listening and kids that are home for the summer and maybe they're going into their junior year and they want to figure out what they're going to do in college.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of careers you can send them into with certainty to go, oh, yeah, people are going to want to hire you 4 years down the road.
Right.
But there is in technology. So where would you tell them to focus?
Well, I would tell them to focus, you know, clearly, you know, get a taste for it. Take any computer class you can, introductory stuff. There's a lot of stuff you can do online that allows you to just play with it for free. And there's several resources out there available to you. So and some people, I would urge young kids and their parents, and I'm a recent grandparent, to say, hey, you know what, look at this, get into this. Because there is a reality check that not everybody can be a star on American Idol or The Voice. You really got to look at earning a living at some point. And again, having three kids I put through college myself who are now in the working world, you know, it's looking back. Now, you can't train a person and make them become an engineer, if you will, but you at least should consider it, I would argue.
Yeah, put it in the mix. Recent grandparents, my ears perk up. Mine's 18 months old. How about you?
2.5 weeks. Grandfather of twins, a boy and a girl. My daughter did a great job, so we're excited about
that. God bless you.
Hi, Tennyson. Hi, Lakeland. That's a shout out to my kids.
Cool names.
Yeah, my wife's maiden name, Tennyson. You know. And
awesome.
Lakeland.
Well, where do you get to the 18-month stage? I mean, I'm not saying your grandkids will compete with mine because she's clearly exceptional.
no doubt.
But it's nothing but fun. It's amazing.
Everybody says that. So this is our first, so we're really excited about it.
And you think forward in this field. It's impossible to imagine what your grand twins or my granddaughter will have in front of them in 18 years.
Well, again, in my own 30-year career, I could see what's happened. I can only imagine. I'm kind of a Star Trek geek. I see all the futuristic stuff you see in sci-fi.
Yeah.
I think that stuff's going to be passé by the time these kids get to that age.
Does Abigail play on an iPad or an iPhone yet?
Yeah.
Okay, really?
She swipes.
Yeah, you know. And she's 18 months. My goddaughter did that at 2 or 2.5, I think, at the time, and just went over. And her mother never taught her this. Turned on the phone, swiped, found the picture of the app that she likes, and basically started it.
Not having played with it, I'm sure I'll start seeing this soon, but the educational tools at such a young age are enticing. You think about the software programming, that's all software, right? But the creative minds that came up with, you know, working with education people who understand, you know, youngsters and how they engage and you know, really lead them to stuff is probably amazing. So it's all part of the ecosystem.
So there's other guys out there who are running around this morning, they're hearing us talk about this, or maybe they're picking up the podcast anywhere in the country. country.
Right.
And for a company like yours, or a company that has guys our age who maybe don't know tech, but they know they've got to hire tech, what do you do for them? What do you tell them?
Well, I mean, I'm in that business to help them figure that out. We have U.S.-based people, and we do a lot of heavy lifting for companies who just can't find the engineering skills and talent to write this software, so we augment teams. We have very skilled people offshore that work with us, and my U.S. folks that allow companies here in the U.S., a lot of tech companies, to go to market faster. What's happening downtown here in the West Loop, you know, Groupon and Salesforce and Google, yeah, they're all switching people around. They're all kind of, you know, trying to create that talent or grab that talent, and that creates a difficult situation.
But that's a limited pool, right?
It's a limited pool.
Last forever.
It's finite. And the regress and the best talent, and what happens, it's supply and demand, right? It's, again, what I said back in 2000. Salaries are going up. Attrition levels are going up. So you get something going, people start, you know, getting stolen away from you because something's cooler down the street. And this is a big issue for companies that don't locate themselves here in the city, because most of the young people who are tech people, who are good engineers, you know, if they're not on the red line or the blue line or can ride their bike, they're not interested. They don't own cars. They're not going to the burbs. And that's a big concern for this. Concern for companies who are headquartered out there. Not necessarily high-tech companies, but who need tech talent.
Yeah. Does a kid need a four-year education to get a great tech career, or would they serve themselves better to get in the business as fast as possible?
That's a great question, Steve. My opinion would be, you know, I think if a company would look at a person's skill set and they have the aptitude and they can demonstrate that they are self-taught or have learned...
Work.
Yeah, they'll learn. I would argue that you could bring them into an organization and they'd learn from the people around them. Does that hurt them in management in the future? Well, that's depending on the company's, you know, philosophy on corporate hierarchy or whatever. But I think if you can do it, they don't care.
I know you do a lot of work out of India. How much of our pool of talent's coming from there?
It's still a vast majority of people that come here or are working there, just because India has been doing it for, you know, nearly three decades now. But Eastern Europe, South America are all sources of what they're doing for their populations is have invested heavily, especially in India, in terms of STEM, right? And what's happening there, they've had many schools and government funding to attract U.S. businesses to do all that. So they've built, and, you know, India's got 1.3 billion people. So this emerging middle class is happening where people who can get a tech degree and can contribute in the tech economy now have, you know, an opportunity to earn a great living. You know, Modi and Trump were together not long ago, Prime Minister of India, and, you know, tech is a big part of this, and the economy of India is growing the fastest in the world for a reason, and tech is a big part of that.
And I would assume once you have those tech skills, America is where you want to go because you can actually get paid here.
Yeah, that's true, but actually the salaries are also rising in countries like India, everywhere else, but it's still a matter of the labor arbitrage still does exist, which is favorable to U.S. companies if they're leveraging that talent. Where it gets a little muddy is when people from these countries, whether it's India or Belarus or what have you, come to the U.S. under H-1Bs, and there's a lot of, you know, that's where you see a lot of the political storm around H-1Bs, the leverage, or the, I wouldn't say fraud, but the, well, there's some of that, I imagine, but more importantly, well, there's a lot of abuse of it.
There's pay for citizenship stuff that goes on.
There's all of that stuff.
There's all, it's ridiculous.
But, you know, the H-1Bs haven't changed. It's still a $60,000 ceiling. That was 20 years ago. That salary is anybody today. You know, today the salary is like when the Googles of the world and the large companies, they bring over talent when they need them, Microsoft, et cetera, they're paying a great wage, this, just like they would here, where a lot of companies are trying to get underneath that, and there's brokerage firms that bring talent. Maybe it's not even that good. Anyway, it is what it is.
Who's our biggest competition aside from India?
Well, I wouldn't say it's competition. I think it's there to augment what we're doing here in the United States. The innovation still happens here. People do want to come here. They want our people in India. We don't do the H-1B thing at all. We have people working for companies here, but are always in India.
But you mean competition for bodies?
Yeah.
Competition for bodies?
Bodies.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the drift.
Competition for bodies and to fill the jobs. Like, is China taking...
Oh, yes. Yeah, China's trying to, but they still have a bigger language barrier. In India, most people speak English because it was, you know, it's the world's largest democracy when you think about it. So when the Brits had it, a lot of kids spoke English. I mean, they have accents, of course, but there's much better communication skills. And the sheer size of the market in terms of tech talent is exponentially larger than any South American or Eastern European country.
You optimistic about it?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
We're gonna get it figured out.
Well, I think we're in good shape. It's just a matter of making sure that the U.S. does the right thing. H-1Bs are a great program. It has to be monitored and managed correctly, and it's got a little bit, you know, old.
Who is the Ed Zofer of lobbyists who's working on these politicians to realize what they're blocking?
Yeah, it's certainly not me, but it's probably, I'd be speculating, so I couldn't really tell
you. But is there somebody in the House or the Senate that jumps out that gets it?
You know, offhand, I don't know. I'm not that political, to be honest with you, so I couldn't tell you if there's somebody like that out there. But, you know, I think there's a political thing about people taking jobs. The jobs, generally, if the H-1B is coming over here to do a job or what we do, it doesn't take away American jobs. It actually, I would argue, creates them because it gets things to market faster, allows people to spend more money on things locally like sales and marketing and development, innovation rather, things of that nature. So, but I don't have on the political, what's going on in Washington, Capitol Hill. I'm not, you know, any expert to
discuss. It's not ruining your business. So.
Oh, not at all. In fact, it's helping our business. The more they clamp down H-1Bs, it helps me because I don't do that. We simply have people there with my people here who are working, and they have now a factory they can use just like companies have been doing for years.
But you'd like to fix the system for everybody because you're a decent human being.
Well, I'm totally a decent human being. I'm a born and bred Chicagoan, you know, but the fact is, yeah, I think it's got to be done right. Everybody should be on an equal playing field, and some ways that doesn't exist.
You're great. I hope we can use you again.
Pleasure to meet you all. Thanks for having me.
You know, and I'm sorry you were so nervous coming on. See, he acts like this is no big deal, being on the Cochrane Show.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if people are interested in what you're doing, you know, send them to your website, or what do they
do? SenecaGlobal.com. Easy place to see. We're a cool company. We'd love to talk to you. Thank you for having
us. Congratulations on the twins.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, best
thank
to
you.
Your family. Don Williams and I will talk about his show coming up, not today's show. Well, we can talk about today's show as well, but before the break and before the big story, what's the deal with you not knowing how to park your car?
Oh, boy.
Downstairs.
Oh, my gosh. He's trying.
I mean,
listen, I got a call from Stephanie about that.
You're
today.
A grown man.
Today,
park between the
Did
white
you
lines.
Yeah, today.
Why can't you park between the white lines? What is the problem?
We don't have time for me to answer this in full, but I will tell you this:
is
the
it
last
a depth
time
perception issue.
The last time you spent time talking about my inability to park here,
yes,
I got a call from my mom. I will play it for you. She said, "Honey, Steve Cochran is saying something about you, and I don't know if I like it."
Well, I like your mom a lot, and She's I like delightful. You a lot, yeah. And I'm a big supporter of you, as you know.
It doesn't sound like it Why when you talk about my parking.
Yeah, you were pretty harsh.
Why can't?
Thank you, Andrea. Although you didn't come to my rescue, as I recall.
No, you know what,
is
though?
There
Where
one...
were you when I needed you?
I was here. I was right here.
Do you know what John did? You know how great he is? And I don't mind how he
This
parks?
Is so funny, because what Wait. Happens is, anytime there's a conversation that you think is even remotely awkward, you start to panic.
And I like that about you.
No, he jump-started my car.
Thank you.
When my battery died.
Lucky it was parked nearby.
Yeah, I was going to say, how could you reach it from your angle?
Okay.
Because it was angled perfectly into my car.
Thank you.
Is this a problem you have just in this lot or other lots as well?
Your Honor, I'll plead the fifth. I don't have to talk to you about this. I'm looking at my phone.
It's what, at a parking website to see if you can get a tip?
Looking at my phone.
931. Here's the deal, kids. Big shtick. TR, Teddy Roosevelt, John
Do you get
Williams.
The title of that? Do you know why we're calling it Big
I do.
Stick?
Yeah, Big Stick.
Andrea.
Can I answer?
Yeah, sure.
Speak softly and carry a big stick.
Yeah. So, but this is kind of a...
It's a play on words.
Thank you!
Right?
What, people didn't understand why it was Big Stick?
I was worried that it wouldn't work.
You may be overthinking that a little.
Well.
You can get them at WGNradio.com/events, or you can call the Mac box office. You've done a show at the Mac? It's a great theater.
Yeah, it's one of the best venues in the city.
630-942-4000, Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 6, to do the tickets that way. Or just go to WGNradio.com/events.
Thank you.
The Parking Bandit and I will return after the big story, which is after the break, which is next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
King in the castle, king in the castle. Have a chair, I have a chair. King in the castle.
Big Big Bad John.
Radio's always better when John Williams is on it. Daily from 1 to 3 and Saturday morning at what time?
I want to borrow this.
John called home, right?
I'm on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon.
Kind of quiet and shy.
After Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini.
After you do the crosstalk, do you send Lou to your house to fix stuff?
No, Lou doesn't work for family and friends. Does he work for you? Have you ever had Lou out to your place?
I have called him many times.
I call him all the time.
Yeah. Go, hey, I got this or that. Should I hire this person or that person? Or I'll occasionally ask him, like, I'm going to fix something about how to fix it. And then he'll tell me, and I go, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Well, I used all of his people. We moved into this condo, and we wanted to paint it, and the floors done, and had a plumber look at the gas line and just everything. We used all of his people. And I said, I am so appreciative, Lou, for you not doing the work, but you getting me people who would that you knew and trusted. And what can I do for you? And he said, well, just take us out to dinner. He says, but bring your wallet. Then he says, no, bring both wallets because we're going out.
Oh, they were going to.
And I thought that was just like Lou being funny.
He's not kidding.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Did you actually have the dinner?
We did, the four of us.
And where'd you go?
To a place called it's in Evanston, the Barn. I think it's the barn.
Mm. Well, Dave, you would know. You know every restaurant.
It's an old horse barn that they converted into a steakhouse. Wonderful place, but
expensive.
You spent your entire 2017 salary?
That's funny.
Teddy Roosevelt's coming to town. Yep, for sure. Come back for two shows, 10 a.m., 1 p.m., sponsored by American Sale. And that's Saturday, August 12th at the Mac and the College of DuPage. Now, these shows always sell out.
Yeah, they do. We have a few seats left.
I would say get tickets.
You should.
Now.
Every year it's different, too. If you've seen one show, like Andrea, you and your family went to the one that we had out at
Navy Pier. Yeah, the Shakespeare
Theater in the Round.
That was such a cool show.
Wasn't that a great venue?
Great venue, yeah.
Yeah. And COD, and it doesn't hold as many. I think that only holds about 400.
Yeah.
We wanted to accommodate more people. So we're doing two shows, one at 10, one at 1. It'll be that Saturday. And I think the 1 o'clock is about sold out. The 10 o'clock is getting
pretty
close,
much.
So yeah.
It's
College
so
of DuPage, that's 750 seats, though, or something.
Yeah, it is. So
you need that many, yeah.
He does okay. And then people, you know, and here's the deal. Every year it's different because every year there are new issues that people want to ask about. Like you may want to ask about him charging up San Juan Hill or Speak Softly, Carry a Big Stick, some of his things that he said and didn't believe. But you may say...
Being shot and going forward and making a speech.
What should we... Yeah, absolutely. He was assassinated or attempted and then still finished the speech anyway. But you may want to ask him, what would you do about North Korea?
Right.
And people always do that. They ask him current questions.
Right, or Donald Trump.
So do you find... What's the breakdown of the crowd? Do you get just fans? Do you get history nerds? Do you get a little bit of everybody?
That's a good question. I don't know how to describe them. GN fans and listeners. But I think a lot of people are dragged to it by somebody who goes, this will be fun, trust me. I mean, think about it.
And then they end up delighted.
I know, because if I said, hey, let's go see John talk to a guy who pretends to be Teddy Roosevelt on a Saturday, do you want to do that? No, of course you don't. On your way out, you will be so thankful you did this.
You're like pre-Hamilton, because Hamilton was like that. You would think, oh, you know, history, but you go and it's cool, it's different, it's rap.
And that's a lot like John DeCoste and I in our show, Millard.
Yes, much like
Millard
that.
Fillmore.
I knew you were
going to
do
like
this.
That, yes.
You always do the Millard Fillmore shtick when I'm trying to sell presidential shows.
You don't know about the show? The
no,
show
I haven't been to Millard.
Pull the promo and we'll play it before John leaves.
Okay.
Or pull a promo.
No, let's do that. It's always
where did you? Is this the same guy?
These are my friends.
Is this the same guy that played Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah.
Still okay.
Is.
Where did you find him?
Quick story is that I was doing a show in Minneapolis, and he was speaking to the State Bankers Association. They called us up, said, "Hey, do you want to talk to this guy? He thinks he's a historian, and he does a one man show as Jefferson." I said, "No." And I said, "Ah, what the hell? You know, if he can talk about history of presidents, we'll talk about the current president and stuff." So anyway, we sit down, and I had to interview him as Clay Jenkinson, the historian, about presidencies. Then I said, "You do a Jefferson show, right?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "We'll take a break. Come back. You be Jefferson." He says, "Okay." And when I looked down at the lines, they were all ringing. I mean, off the hook, asking about Sally Hemings, separation of church and state, writing the Declaration of Independence. And I realized there's a population out there that loves Jefferson. We did about 10 years of Jefferson shows, or 10 Jefferson shows. And he says, "I do a Roosevelt, too." I said, "Okay, let's do Teddy Roosevelt." We walked off the stage after the first Roosevelt show, and I said, "Why did we ever do Jefferson?"
Right. Yeah.
Because Roosevelt is hilarious, but he's true. He's brilliant.
He is he's fantastic. I would highly encourage
the show. When you do the Roosevelt shows, does he get into his lifetime friendship then fight with Taft?
Yes, he does. Well, it depends if somebody asks or if I go there.
But I actually read, history nerd, I read the Taft-Roosevelt biography.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating story because nobody goes, "Hey, Taft, what were the golden years of Taft like?"
Right. Yeah.
But people do talk about Roosevelt because he's one of history's great characters.
And Roosevelt tried to get out of the way at first, then he got pissed off, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting relationship between the two.
And he'd ultimately lose that election.
Yeah, right. Well, and one of his great regrets is that he said, "I will consider my first term," where he served after the assassination. So, but it was almost a first full term. Then he's elected or reelected, if you will, for a second term, but he technically qualified for one more term.
Right.
But he said, "No, I will consider the first partial term a full term. I will not run for reelection after my first elected term."
That's called an honorable politician.
Yeah,
I know
that.
The words
And then he regretted it, but he goes, "No, I said I was not going to run again, and so I will not
and
run
he
again."
Didn't.
Thank God nobody sticks to their word anymore. Yeah. Look how that's working out
for us. Don't you think that would be interesting now to just have a president on stage who can talk about honesty, integrity, and by the way, he is like Trump in a lot of ways. So this is not a Trump bashing show, but it'll be certainly reflective of it. That's for sure.
And when you get to the Q&A, if Trump isn't discussed previous to that,
Oh, yeah. I'd be disappointed. I'd be shocked if we don't spend time on that.
I love the Q&A. That's the best part.
Yeah. Now, does he do a lot of these shows around the country, or is he just you?
I'm the only one that he goes on stage with. He'll do one-man shows. He's done shows for the Supreme Court. He's done shows for the U.S. Senate. He's done shows for...
Is this how he primarily makes his living?
Yeah. He writes some books. He does some videos. But this is what he does for a hoo-ha.
Imagine how loud the voices in his head are.
I know.
Imagine the notorious RBG watching the show. I have questions.
Right, right. You're being grilled by the court. Again, we're talking about Teddy Roosevelt, John Williams, big shtick. You get it? You should. If you need the title explained to you, maybe you don't.
Yeah,
don't
show. Never mind.
Teddy Roosevelt with John Williams, sponsored by American Sale and on sale now. You can buy tickets online or by phone for the 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. shows. Both are about sold out, so I would get those quickly, as in now. The Mac Box office open Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 6. That's at 630-942-4000. Or you could simply buy them online at WGNradio.com/events. All right, you've been back with us for how long?
Too long now, evidently. Still reeling from the parking controversy.
Yeah, I thought you took that well. Is it 2 months?
Yeah.
How's it feel?
Feels better every day, but it doesn't feel like 100% yet.
That's interesting to me, because I would think this would be the ultimate riding the bike, sliding back in.
It is and it isn't. You know, I often tell our boss here, Todd Manley, that. I go, you know, I thought I'd be in my groove quicker. But you know what is freaking me out a lot? It's still like when I look to my right where the phones are, and then if I use the computer to your right for audio, I still do a little hunt and peck. I'm not as smooth. And if you're not
physically... Because the toys are in a different spot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if you're not physically comfortable in a space, then your mind is doing that instead of focusing on what those brilliant words are.
I think you sound great, man.
Well, it's nice of you to say. And I really appreciate the time coming in here, except for the part where we talk about parking, because that is evidently a thing with this.
Is this painful for you, the parking thing?
Well, I've never had this brought to me before. But then my wife of many years said to me after she heard your little hoo-ha, she goes, "You aren't a very good parker."
Oh, she said that?
And I'm like,
but don't
you
see this as an opportunity for personal growth?
For you guys, yeah.
By the way, you should be so proud of your son, too. He produces here on the
weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Great
producer. It happened again.
He is a good kid.
As soon as it was just mildly awkward.
Isn't that great?
You
Dave,
caved
though?
Like it. You just went over.
She's a mom. She's not a mom, but she's a mom.
I know. I'll get that maternal instinct going.
God bless you, Andrea.
Thank
I love you,
John. I love you and your
Andrea's
hair.
Andrea's son and I started the same week at this radio
station. We do.
I do know that.
Same week.
And John and I are friends.
1997. I know you guys are.
Well, John, we started the same day.
We are like the big three.
Yes.
Mary, Andrea, and me.
See how John and I are friends?
I know. I like that.
Well, there used to be a time where people thought we didn't get along. I've always loved you. You know that.
I don't know that that's true. But I...
Remember we used to steal Thanksgiving dinner from the fourth floor?
Well, yes, we did.
See what I did there?
I am.
Because we had to work the holidays.
You know this.
Okay.
Because I don't want people to come up with the wrong attitude. Okay. You know what a big fan I am of yours.
You have been my biggest supporter. Here.
And I continue
you've
to be.
Also been my biggest, but you've also been, but nobody has made fun of me more than you
that
here.
Is true.
And that's what makes my mother nervous when
what
she
do you mean
calls.
Make, fun? What, make fun of you? The parking.
Millard Fillmore. Do you remember when we went to Kentucky and redid the famous broadcast, the trial,
the Scopes Monkey Trial?
Oh, yeah.
And whenever you went to me, the station sent me down there, you played the theme from
Deliverance.
I was
immature then.
Yeah.
I'm much more mature now.
You played the theme from Deliverance when he was
in Southern Kentucky.
Do you ever listen to the show and what he does to Andre and me? Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. I know. Why should I be any different?
And by the way, John,
understand
just
that.
To prove that the Millard thing is deadly serious, listen. Yeah.
Life is about lessons learned.
I put your right hand out. I frank a Pierce handshake. I say farewell. I blew my biggest break. So much for compromising. With the North and South, I barely kept things civil. Soon a war breaks out. Millard Fillmore could have been a winner, but lost the chicken dinner now. Millard Fillmore, choke, choke. Millard Fillmore, back he goes to Buffalo, hanging with his head down low. Millard Fillmore, now you're nothing but a joke.
Millard.
Coming soon.
We're still casting, John. There's a shot for you there.
Once again, thanks for letting me come into the studio.
love you,
John. It's a pleasure to sit next to Dave.
You
want to
plug something coming up this afternoon? Or just no. Listen?
Yeah, I'm just going to. If I thought about it, I'd come up with what we're doing this afternoon.
It's going to be great. Starts at 1.
Oh, hey, you know, we're talking about the cars. The Volvo, which is going all electric. The Tesla. Is it time to buy? We'll do a little bit of that as well as all the other stuff.
Actually, helpful information.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, man. Good to see you. And again, get your tickets for TR. It's Big Shtick. Teddy Roosevelt and John Williams coming to the Mac, WGNradio.com/events.
Events.
Yeah, hard to believe. I didn't remember that part. Huh. You know me, just another pretty blonde, and Bill and Wendy are next.